So I want to do something a little different this morning. I want to read a story, and I'm going to put it up on the screen. But it's a children's story that I ran across. Maybe you've heard of it, maybe you haven't. It was written by a lady named Tracy Ludwig, and it's called The Invisible Boy. Anybody ever heard of it? No? If you don't and you have children, I'm going to recommend you get it. And I think it goes well with what we're going to kind of close out this passage on the Good Samaritan. So, the invisible boy. Can you see Brian? The invisible boy. Even Miss Carlton had trouble noticing him in the classroom. She's too busy dealing with Nathan and Sophie. Nathan has problems with what Miss Carlton calls volume control. He uses his outside voice inside too much. Sophie whines and complains when she doesn't get her way. Nathan and Sophie take up a lot of space. Brian doesn't. When the bell rings for recess, Micah and JT take turns choosing kids for their kickball teams. The best players get picked first, then the best friends of the best players, then the friends of the best friends. Only Brian is left waiting and hoping. JT glances in Brian's direction and just as quickly looks away. We've got enough players for each team. He tells the others, let's play ball. In the cafeteria, Madison and her friends talk about her birthday party. The rope swing over the pool was awesome, says JT. Yeah, so was the water slide. That was the best pool party ever. I'm so glad you guys had fun, says Madison. Everybody did except Brian. He wasn't invited. At choosing time, while the other kids play boards and read, Brian sits at a table and does what he loves to do. He draws fire-breathing dragons, scaling tall buildings, space aliens locked in intergalactic battles, greedy pirates digging for treasure, and superheroes with the power to make friends wherever they go. And on Monday morning, Miss Carlotti introduces Justin, a new student. Brian smiles shyly at him. Some of the other kids sneak looks at Justin, trying to figure out if he's cool enough to be their friend. They haven't quite made up their minds yet. At lunchtime, Madison and JT watch Justin eat with chopsticks. What's this? What's that? Says Madison. She points at Justin's food. As he explains what it is, it's bulgogi. It's a Korean, I think I said that right. It's a Korean barbecue. And the kids laugh. All of them, that is, except Brian. He sits there wondering which is worse, being laughed at or feeling invisible. The next day, when Justin goes to his cubby to put away his backpack, he notices a piece of paper with his name on it. At morning recess, Brian finds a piece of paper, finds a piece of chalk on the ground and starts drawing away. They begin to have a conversation in the midst of it. Hey, Justin, Emilio calls out from the tetherball court, you're up next. Sorry, I gotta go, says Justin. By the way, that's a really cool drawing, he adds before taking off. Back at class, Miss Carlotti asks the kids to team up in twos or threes for a special project. The kids scurry around the room to pair off. Brian heads towards Justin. I'm already with Justin, says Emilio. Find someone else. Brian turns, looks at the floor, wishing he could draw a hole right there to swallow him up. Miss Carlotti gives the class directions for the project. Your assignment to work together to write a story about what you are in the photograph. And as you notice, Brian's with the two. And maybe you notice a little something else. He's got some color to him. Whoa, cool, says Emilio. What kind of people do you think we live in houses like that? I don't know. I bet Brian could draw them to go with the story, says Justin. Brian smiles as he takes out his lucky pen. And they begin to draw and make believe. And you missed the really cool part because for some reason it's not in there. But in the end, it has and says, so Brian's not so invisible anymore, is he? Whether we're 5 or we're 95, whether we want to admit it or not, invisible people are all around us. And as we finish the study of Luke 10 of the Good Samaritan, we can't help but notice the invisible in the story. The person beaten on the side of the road. His clothes are torn. His body is beaten. And he is left for half dead. Yet when the priest and when the Levite walk by, he's invisible to them. They didn't have time. They didn't want to hassle. Although as we read the story, it's really hard for us to imagine that a half-dead man could be ignored by anybody. I mean, when we think to ourselves, we might say, you know, surely I would never ignore someone who's beaten and clothes are torn and they're left half dead on the road. I would never do that. And you might be right. You wouldn't do it. But how many people have you walked by? Have you not listened to or not had the time for? How many of you have looked at people who weren't beaten and their clothes torn, but you just didn't have time for them? Their clothes were nice. They seemed to have their life together. They were married. They had a well-paying job. They lived in a nice house. They even drove a good car. And they even came to church from time to time. All in all, when we think of the picture of this person, we would say what? We would say, they're doing fine. Now, fine is an interesting word, isn't it? It's kind of a loaded word. It's a word we hear a lot, especially if you have kids. How was your day at school? Fine. How are your friends? Fine. How was athletics? Fine. Now, most of us who are parents, what aren't okay with fine. It's not a good thing to say fine. In fact, if our kids say fine, generally parents start to delve in a little bit. We kind of pry. Well, that's not good enough. What does fine mean? And generally you get an eye roll and they look at you and say, I said it was fine. What's interesting though, what's not fine for parents when a kid says it becomes okay when we're in conversations with other people. How's your family? Fine. Okay, good talk. The word becomes different when we talk to other people. When they use the word fine, we don't generally delve. We don't pry. We don't dig a little deeper. And I have a hunch you might be a lot like me, which Chris can attest to this in some conversations we had. When Chris starts talking to me, my first inclination is, how long is this story? Yes. But really, when we and I say that to say that's part of who I am. When I talk to somebody and ask them how they're doing and they don't finish with fine, but they start going into a story, the first thing that goes on in my mind is, how long am I going to have to be here for this? I don't know if I have time for this. So in fact, when people say fine, I think we kind of, oh, thank God. Thank you. I don't have to get into anything more than that. You're fine. Good. So am I. And you walk away. We don't have to get messy. We don't have to go any further. But what was interesting is I was reading a book by an author named Anne Lamont. And Anne Lamont is a writer, speaker, and she's also a recovering alcoholic. And she says something interesting about the word fine. She says when people in recovery hear the word fine, this is what they think. Frayed, insecure, neurotic, and emotional. Anybody feel fine today? When they hear fine, this is what they hear. But when we hear fine, what do we hear? In many ways, fine gives us permission to make somebody invisible. It makes us able to have the conversation and then walk away. It allows us to walk away from instead of towards, and slowly over time, we get really good at this to the point where we become immune to another's beaten and broken body because we just don't see it, partly because we don't want to see it. We're too busy, we're too tired, and we're too broken ourselves to see it. The last thing we need is to bring someone else's baggage into my life. So please, when I ask how you're doing, just say fine. And the best word that I can come up with this is apathy. When we read the text of the Good Samaritan, when we read that short story, we've become an apathetic people. The apathetic life lets fine become the norm. We become fine with fine because it means less effort on my part. It means I don't have to cross to the other side of the road. Apathy says, okay, I get it. I'll love my neighbor, but I'm going to do it from way over here. Apathy says that. Apathy says, I can sort of be in your life, but not really be in your life. In fact, it doesn't cost anything, and it says this. It says, you're someone else's problem. Someone else can take care of it. I don't have to. And all of this allows for us to stay out of the fray. It allows us to keep our relationships at surface level. And it allows for our relationships to just be fine. But as we've read the Good Samaritan, I think we see that the text tells us something different. It tells us something different about Jesus. It tells us something different about God. And it tells us something different about ourselves. To follow Jesus is not to be okay with fine. It's actually to go beyond fine. It's to look deeper. It's to be prepared to move deeper. And in fact, what we find is Jesus is not on the side of the road moving away from the problem. Where do we actually find Jesus? In the one place we're not ready to go, the other side of the road. Jesus is the Samaritan who moves to the other side of the road. We look up at the story and we're walking down the road and we say, Jesus, what are you doing over there? Don't you know, Jesus, it's safer over here. And yet Jesus is on the other side of the road. Why? Because Jesus was never okay or content with fine. And that's what I think we struggle with, is fine keeps us right here. It doesn't make us move. Fine is this word that allows for apathy to set in so that we can make excuses. We don't have to worry about others. We can write someone else's story. Apathy costs very little in life because we don't have to do anything. And in a culture that doesn't want to have to do anything, apathy runs rampant. But we quickly learn as we finish the story that Jesus looks at the lawyer. And there's that very last line in the Good Samaritan in which as the lawyer answers Jesus, Jesus looks at the lawyer and says, what? Go and do likewise. Go and do likewise is what Jesus tells the lawyer. Go and do likewise is what Jesus tells us today. The text tells us that the difference between apathy of the first travelers and the Samaritan is this, is he was moved with compassion. Something inside of him, and that Greek word actually is this, it starts with this phrase, splach. It's nasty. But when we think about it, it has to do with this inside guts of us. The inside of us moves, forces us to move across the road. And by the way, it's not only used in the story of the Good Samaritan. Chris also read for us that little part of the parable of the prodigal son. The same word is used in the prodigal son. When the father sees the good-for-nothing son who has spent all of the family wealth. We'd rather be the big brother. But we find that Jesus is in the Father. That Jesus walks to the other side of the road. And in fact, what we begin to see is a picture of Jesus. And we begin to notice it throughout the life of Jesus. We notice that Jesus is the one who notices the invisible ones of society. The ones in which the culture has become apathetic and says, I don't have time for you. It's Jesus who moves to them. And while fine might be the answer we want to hear from someone or the answer that we place in someone else's mouth so we don't have to move towards them, it's not the answer Jesus is okay with. When Jesus sees others, he feels something. And what his life is filled with is the opposite of apathy, but it's empathy. Jesus' life is empathetic towards those that he sees. Jesus is drawn to the invisible ones of society. But the problem with empathy, as we talk about, and I think we'd all agree that we probably need it in the world right now, is empathy is scary and it is hard. Because it's easy not to do anything. It's less stressful and it's less work. But empathy is hard because it makes us confront the very thing we really don't want to confront in our lives, and that's our own issues. When we move toward someone, when we pause, when we listen to the stories, something happens inside of us. All of a sudden, the person in front of us begins to have color. They begin to have a life. They begin to have a story. They begin to have a reason why they are who they are. We begin to see their scars. We begin to see their torn clothes. And we begin to see their battered bodies. And it's sometimes hard to look at. It's sometimes hard to confront. But you might notice something else in the midst of this. You might begin to notice your own beat up body, your own battered self. And you might, in that moment, empathy begins to create inside of us this compassion towards the other. And the word compassion is beautiful in this sense. It means sharing with the suffering of another. We can begin to share and understand and become part of their life as much as they're a part of our life. But the very first thing we have to do is move. So here's what I propose. Next time someone, let's start with just in here, okay? Next time you're talking to someone in here and you're having a conversation, you look at them and say, "So how you doing?" Now, if they say, "Fine," or even the other word we have for fine is okay, I'm going to challenge you to delve deeper. I'm going to challenge you to not let fine be the best answer. In fact, when you hear the word fine, look at them and say, "You know what? You and I haven't gone to lunch in a while. Let's go to lunch." Or, "Hey, you like to grab coffee? Who doesn't like to grab coffee?" Not Starbucks. They're just a little overrated, but redefine down here. There we go. Grab coffee. Or you know what? How about you come over to the house, sit down, we'll have a meal together. But what if we as a people actually went along with this idea that Jesus wasn't okay with fine and that Jesus moved to the other side of the road? And what if we began to move to the other side of the road for people in conversations to get ready to listen to the long story? Because in that moment, I believe understanding has potential. And then let's move it outside of here with brothers and sisters. What if we did it to our brother and sister neighbors? As you're mowing your lawn and you see someone, Michael's story was amazing, was it not? That story in which you stop and you listen and you understand. Why is this good? Because then you know who they are. Why they are who they are. That's where understanding begins. It's when we're willing to practice, and it takes practice, empathy. When we're willing to practice empathy and move to the other side of the road. The Good Samaritan, what it does for us is it begins to open up this new way of life in the world. It begins for us to notice people. It begins for us to see others. And it begins for us to realize that we too have made many people invisible. Because we're too tired, we don't have time, or we don't want our baggage to be brought up to the surface as well. But what the Good Samaritan does is it reconnects us with humanity. It reconnects us in that in that moment of conversation, we see Jesus. And they see Jesus in us. And in between, in that moment of conversation, the Holy Spirit does something. The Holy Spirit is working on both of us, healing both of us, as we allow those moments of them to show their true self and us to show our true self. So let's not be the Levite. Let's not be the priest. But let's be the person who begins to give color to those who feel and look invisible. And maybe you today have felt invisible. Maybe you have felt invisible because of what life has been doing. And it's been easy to be invisible, to not go into your story. Well, I hope today as a church and as a community, we can do something different. That we'll listen. We won't speak, we'll listen. And we'll find mutuality and we'll find understanding. That we all understand that all of us in here are afraid, insecure, neurotic, and just a tad bit emotional. And if we're all like that, then I thank God I'm hanging out with the right people. And others need to feel that as well. They need to know that they're not the only ones. Because I guarantee you they're not. If you have any needs this morning, if you have any prayer requests, if something's going on in your family, we'll have elders up front. We have members next to you who would love to hear your story and pray with you. But if you have any needs this morning, come as we stand and as we sing.